thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's January 2021, and you're listening to episode 219, which is a discussion about the New Age guru David Wilcock, who can be seen regularly on the History Channel. On this episode, I'm joined by Lindsay Matternwalt, who holds an MA in apologetics from Denver Seminary. She also has a master's in public administration and is an attorney with a JD from St. Mary's School of Law. Lindsay is also the executive director of Mama Bear Apologetics, the director of children's ministries at her church, and a member of the Pelican Project. Lindsay has written a feature article for the print edition of the Christian Research Journal in the volume 43, number one issue of our magazine, and it's called Humanity's Ascension, Assessing the History Channel's New Age Time Travel Guru, David Wilcock. And you can read her article when you subscribe to the magazine at equip.org. Lindsay, it's good to have you on.
It's great to be here, Melanie. Thanks for having me back.
Well, last time Lindsay was on, she was talking to us about some up-and-coming New Age gurus, and of course, we're having her back to tell us about another New Age guru who's very popular on the History Channel as well as online on his YouTube channel. And as I mentioned, she has written a feature article about him in our current print edition of the Christian Research Journal, which you can subscribe to read it at our website, equip.org. Now, the person that you focused on this time is a teacher named David Wilcock. So could you tell us a little bit about David Wilcock and what his background is and why he's so popular?
Yeah, David Wilcock is a New York Times bestselling author. He travels the circuit talking about primarily conspiracy theories right now. He covers a lot of topics, though, very rapidly. If anybody's watched any of his videos, he goes from one topic to the next topic to the next topic. He doesn't like to be referred to as a spiritual leader. I want to preface it from the beginning to say that. He really tries to avoid that title. But when you're watching his videos and you're reading his books, you get the feel that he is guiding people's spirituality. And like I said, he's written several books. His latest one actually came out in the middle of the pandemic, Awakening in the Dream. And he talks about interpreting dreams. Dreams are really important to David. They play a huge role in his childhood and his adulthood. And so he spends quite a bit of time in that book telling people how they can interpret their dreams and get to know what he calls their dream voice.
So how has he been, you know, like he is on various different platforms, but how has he really been looked to as an authority? And so how, not just that, but how do you think that our listeners and readers would know about David Wilcock? And by the way, just you talking about his dreams reminds me in our last podcast when we were talking about New Age gurus, that seems to be a recurring theme that maybe some of these people grew up and had various different dreams and they pursued this path of spirituality.
Yes, I have started to notice that in the current New Age guru world is there are several things that are sort of synchronized, which is kind of funny for me to say that word because David is always talking about synchronicity, and you will see that there are similarities between some of the people that I've talked about in the past and David. He is mostly known for, as you mentioned, the History Channel's Ancient Aliens. That's sort of where lay people got to know David Wilcock, but he has been talking about these topics, these various topics that we'll address in a few minutes, for roughly 30 years. So this is something that he has really dedicated his life to. He's quite passionate about it. But if you ask the average person probably attending church or, you know, reading the newspaper, they're probably not going to know who David Wilcock is. He's somebody that is reaching a certain group of people who are interested in particularly aliens and UFOs.
I am interested, of course, in knowing a little bit more about his background because I remember in our last conversation, and our listeners can, if you haven't heard that conversation with Lindsay about Teal Swan and Chani Nichols, I would highly recommend that you would listen to that because they'd be one thing about these New Age teachers is they're quite large. They have a lot large social media following. So tell me a little bit about his background because it seems like both the kind of the New Age guru circuit, they have similar things in their backgrounds, whether it's, you know, different family situations and or like you were talking about, all their dreams that they interpret a particular way.
Right. David had a traumatic childhood. Very, I wouldn't call it similar to Teal Swan. Teal, hers was at the hands of some pretty bad people. David experienced trauma in his own home, and he really goes into depth on his childhood in his 2016 book, The Ascension Mysteries, which is about 500 pages long. And I'd say two-thirds of it is not about ascension at all. It's about his childhood. His dad was a journalist who covered musicians. And so he spent a lot of time around musicians. He was raised in New York in the 70s, David was. And so that was kind of the time, an era of the New Age, really. And that was a renaissance of the New Age. And that was kind of the experiences that he had around rock musicians. We all kind of know what happens at rock shows in, you know, backstage. And David was exposed to all of that because he went with his dad to these shows. His mom was actually a former Christian and left Christianity and dove into the New Age. And she really believed in conspiracy theories. So she bought into all the conspiracies, especially he talks a bit about the Freemasons. And so she took him to a hippie commune once when he was a child, which doesn't seem like that would be the greatest place for a child. And he actually saw somebody overdose on drugs while he was there. And he describes this in detail and says, you know, it deeply impacted his life. Well, yes, that would. He also claimed that there was this weird, strange thing that happened with some neighbors of his when he was younger. His parents thought that they were part of this secret cult and would have cult parties at their house. And his parents thought that perhaps David and his younger brother, Michael, would be at risk of being taken by this cult group for some of their secret rituals. Some commentators on this that I've read and listened to online have said that it was probably not a cult per se. It was more of a party for adults who wanted to exchange partners. Is the easiest way to say that without getting too explicit. But that instance of being told by his parents that he could perhaps be kidnapped by this cult group and sacrificed or used as, you know, as bait or whatever for this group was really deeply disturbing for David. And he spends quite a bit of time in his books and online talking about how these traumas impacted him. And I think one of the ways that we see this impact him the most is in the way that he talks about his dreams and his dream voice. He started having these dreams when he was two and describes this person who looks like Obi-Wan Kenobi, who is sort of guiding him through life. And he says in relation to his trauma that he would go into his dream state intentionally to find love and support because he wasn't finding those things at home. His parents eventually divorced. David was bullied. There's a lot of similarities again between him and some of the other New Age gurus out there. He struggled with his weight, but he's also very intelligent. Anybody who watches his videos he is able to recall a lot of information very quickly. He claims to have an IQ of 180, which is interesting. I obviously don't know if that's true. But for context, Stephen Hawking had an IQ of about 160. So for him to claim 180, that's pretty high. And then the other question people ask me is, well, is he on drugs? Because sometimes that's the case, is people are getting high and then they're having these dreamlike experiences. David did dabble in drugs when he was younger, but he claims that he no longer takes drugs. So he's drug free.
Now, you're saying that he claims that he's very intelligent and he has a high IQ. So what is his educational background?
Yes. So he has a bachelor's degree in psychology. He had plans to get a PhD in psychology eventually, but that's sort of fizzled out. Other things came up in his life that he just sort of stopped pursuing any higher education past college. He worked for a suicide hotline after college, and he says that gave him a master's equivalent of psychology. Of course, that, you know, that's debatable. And then he uses his psychology degree, or at least he used to counsel people, especially, of course, with their dreams and interpreting their dreams.
Now, one thing that you mention in the article is that he was dabbling in ESP. And so can you kind of describe what that is to our listeners? I think some of this various New Age practices are finding a revitalization specifically on the internet with some of these teachers, you know, garnering large followings. But I think for some younger generations, you know, past kind of the hippie years, 60s, 70s, or even into the 80s when New Age was really big, early 90s, they might not know what ESP is. And so what is that? And how did David Wilcock get involved with it?
ESP is the extrasensory perception. Some of these, some people will call it the sixth sense. Not like the movie The Sixth Sense, where they're seeing ghosts necessarily. But David became exposed to this at a very young age. Now, keep in mind, I've already painted the picture of what his childhood looked like. It was in an environment that was a little unstable, to say the least. And he found a book in his, I think he says his basement, called How to Make ESP Work for You by Harold Sherman. And apparently, the way he tells it is, other kids his age were reading Clifford the Big Red Dog, but he picked this book up and he read it cover to cover. And he does clarify, he says, you know, I didn't really understand all of the words that I was hearing or reading in this book, but I was able to piece things together and get the gist of it using context clues. So ESP really became something that he latched onto for, I don't want to say hope, but his childhood just didn't have a lot of hope. And I think that is important to remember, that one of the things humanity is striving for in general is we're trying to be happy, and he wasn't happy. And ESP was this opportunity for him to be happy.
So how did he get into ESP at such a young age? Like, what drew him into it?
His mom was definitely interested in it and encouraged him even to get involved in ESP. He describes this man again from his dreams, encouraging him to hone his skills so that he could save the world. And so David had this idea that he would be like Nostradamus, for example, and save humanity, I guess, when he was older. And he also really wanted to be like Jesus, interestingly. He thought that he could one day, if he achieved all of his goals doing ESP, he could walk on water and he could heal people. And he sort of set those goals for himself. So what he did to practice was he started an ESP club at school, because why not? He gathered a group of his friends and they created this club where he was able to practice his ESP. He would put them in a group and say, okay, guys, come up with a number and I'm going to go stand over there and then I'm going to guess what number you picked. And that's kind of how he would practice. And sometimes he was successful, and I guess other times he wasn't so successful at it. He would also practice his skills with his mother. And his mother would send him mind messages, so messages through her mind. For example, if he was out playing with his friends at the other side of the neighborhood and she wanted him to come home, she would stand outside and send him a message through her mind. And he would apparently receive this message and say, okay, guys, my mom needs me home. And then he would go home. It's sort of like when you call somebody and they say, oh my gosh, I was just thinking of you. That's so weird that you literally just came into my mind and then the phone rang and it's you. We usually just brush that off as coincidence. But for David, that's not coincidence. That's part of his skills of his extrasensory perception. And other ways that he would practice is sending mind messages to his friends without them knowing. He describes one incident where he sent a mind message to one of his friends about gold. And he said, you, when you wake up, you are going to think about gold. That's going to be the first thing you think of. And later that day, his friend came to him and said, David, when I woke up this morning, the first thing I thought of was my gold watch. And David took that as confirmation that he successfully sent a mind message to his friend, because his friend actually thought about gold. And the final example that I'll give is he's not always using ESP necessarily positively. As I said, he was bullied as a child. And at one point, a bully was riding his bike by him. And David says that he sent a mental laser toward this boy, and the boy fell off his bike. And so that was kind of his way of confirming, I have these skills, I can use these skills. But he spends a lot of time in his adulthood saying, we got to use these skills for good. We can't use them for bad.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Lindsay Madden-Walt, who has written a feature article for the print edition of the Christian Research Journal in Volume 43, Number 1, and it's called Humanity's Ascension, Assessing the History Channel's New Age Time Travel Guru, David Wilcock. You can read her article when you subscribe to the magazine at equip.org for $33.50. Now, if a magazine subscription is not in your budget for this month, but you would still like to be partnering with us, you can do that by leaving us a tip for a small amount, like $3, $5, $10. And you can do this when you go to equip.org and you hit that homepage. You will see magazine. If you click on the drop-down menu, you will find Postmodern Realities Podcast, and there's a link to tip us at any one of the landing pages for those episodes. And we've been going since 2016, so thank you so much as we enter into our fifth year for helping us to continue to bring this podcast to you. And another way that you can really help us out is simply just tell a friend about this podcast. You can share the link for this episode on your social media feed, or you can give us a rating, a review, specifically on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It just helps other people find this content as we bring you interesting and thought-provoking topics that deal with apologetics, Christian growth and deepening your walk with Christ, as well as a lot of cultural apologetics that we bring to you. So thank you for all the ways in which you help to support this podcast and the Christian Research Journal. Well, earlier you were talking about how David Wilcock really believes in dreams and visions, and that he's written quite a bit about it. And these dreams and visions lead to something that he has called ascension. So can you describe to us what he means by ascension and why those dreams and visions lead to that?
Yeah, so ascension is really important in the world of David Wilcock. Like I said, he wrote a book called The Ascension Mysteries, a whole book about it. And the best way to sum up ascension is what he says. He says, all you have to do is be slightly above 50%, quote, service to others, as opposed to service to self, and you're cleared for ascension. So for him, he says, ascension is sort of the veil between life and death. It's when we will fully know everything, when we're going to be fully conscious. This is the time when we reach the highest form of ourselves. And David says that in his studies of 35 different worldviews, including Christianity, he has seen a congruity between these religions and says that they all point to something like a dimensional shift where we're going to be judged on our values, especially forgiveness and love. Are you good or are you bad? And of course, you know, Christianity has this judgment as well. And so people listening to him talking about this, they understand, okay, yes, there's a judgment day coming. And for him, you really just need to be promoting your own ascension throughout your life by doing good toward others. What could inhibit ascension? Trauma inhibits ascension for him. So he says that you need to definitely deal with your trauma or you'll never get your ultimate consciousness. And karma can impact your ascension. And so you have to kind of make sure that you're doing good. And this really ultimately leads to this big event, similar to what I would think of as the Armageddon. And I think what a lot of worldviews would describe as the Armageddon. If you do not ascend, if you do not reach your highest level of self, you are subject to the end. And this for David is a solar flare. He is sort of really stuck on the way the sun works. And he says that solar flares have happened in the past. And he predicts that one is coming. And he predicts that it will come soon. To be fair, he predicted that one would happen in 2012 in conjunction with some of the predictions of the Mayan calendar. And That doesn't appear to have happened. But his next prediction is that it will happen sometime around 2029 is when the sun will flare up, and that will affect Earth in a way that anybody on it would be destroyed. Well, what good is that, you might ask? For him, he says that anybody who has reached ascension will be fine. They won't be affected by this. Anybody who has not reached ascension will be transported to a different location so that they can work toward ascension for the next time that they're able to get it. It gets a little muddy, but his ultimate goal is to encourage goodness in people. And he says that it's really within yourself to ascend. Nobody else can do this for you. And it's a heart goal for yourself, is to do good more than you do bad. Now, does this happen in the Bible? Does the Bible point to ascension? David claims yes. He has said he's not a biblical scholar, but for the verses that he cherry picks, he says that the ascension process is described in the Gospels. Actually, in Luke 17, 28 to 30, it talks about Sodom and Gomorrah, and so shall it be in the days of the Son of Man. And for him, this really points to fire and brimstone, which confirms his theories on solar flares. Jesus talks about the parable of the wheat and the tares in Matthew, and David uses what Jesus says as confirmation of some will be destroyed and some will remain forever. And that for him, again, confirms that this is going to happen. Now, keep in mind, David is not a Christian. He is just using the Bible to support some of the things that he believes.
Well, I think it's interesting that he's been on, he claims, over 100 episodes of Ancient Aliens on History Channel. And I think when, you know, viewers turn on the History Channel, they're expecting science or scholars dealing with, you know, events that happened. But it's very interesting that the History Channel is featuring someone like David, who's believing in dreams and ascension and some of these New Age kind of beliefs. So I just want to ask you a little bit more about his New Age beliefs, since he is featured so prominently. And another thing is, you were talking about some of the videos that he's done. He has quite a few subscribers on YouTube, almost 500,000 of them. And, you know, I looked at one of his videos. I have to admit, I couldn't sit there for almost 3 hours, which is the length of most of his live videos. But, you know, after he has streamed these videos, they have a 250,000 views already in just less than a week. So he is very popular, probably because people find out about him on the History Channel. But why don't you just tell us a little bit more about his New Age beliefs?
Yep, he's definitely very popular when it comes to the ancient alien side of things. And when I mentioned to some of my Christian friends that I was going to be researching him, they knew who he was, but they didn't necessarily know about his New Age beliefs. And there's the rub, because when he's talking about ancient alien civilizations, he is incorporating his spiritual beliefs into those discussions. So if you can sit through a 3 to 4 to 5 hour live video session with him on YouTube, which I have done many times at this point, and you can kind of survive through his rambling and decipher what it is he's saying, because he tends to speak in code a lot, you kind of start to glean what spiritual messages he is subscribing to and what he is trying to promote in the people that are watching him. Some of the New Age beliefs that he repeats frequently is that all are one, all is God. So that's a very New Age belief. I think that's a standard New Age belief. We're all connected. There's this interconnection between the Supreme Being and humanity. He believes in the law of one, which we'll talk about a little bit later. That's a little bit more out there than just your standard New Age belief, but it is the unity of all things. So it does come to it. It's just a little bit more in detail than most New Age speakers subscribe to. He believes in karma, like I mentioned. He does think that you can get off the karmic cycle through ascension, so you're not stuck with karma forever. Once you've ascended, you no longer have to deal with karma. He talks a lot about Jesus, as I've already mentioned, but he, of course, doesn't believe Jesus was God. He thinks that Jesus was just a spiritual figure and a wise teacher, so to speak. And then the biggest one I think that we'll talk about here in a second is reincarnation and how that affected him definitely in the 90s and early 2000s, and really how that affects him as he speaks regularly today.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. So you mentioned that he believes in reincarnation. Does he have the standard view on reincarnation, or does he have his own particular view? And specifically, does he think that he was reincarnated? I know that friends that I've had that subscribe to New Age spirituality, some of them do believe they were reincarnated or in past lives as various different people throughout history.
I would say he holds the standard belief on reincarnation, which is just the rebirth of the soul into a new body. It's linked with karma, as most listeners will probably know. Good, you get good. Bad, you get bad. He actually says, though, that reincarnation is a scientifically proven fact. He says it, but then offers no real evidence for it. But he does say it's scientifically proven. And then in addition to escaping karma when you ascend, you have the ability to escape the reincarnation process once you have ascended as well. Does he believe that he is reincarnated? Yes. He believes that he was once Edgar Cayce, one of the founders of the New Age movement. But I want to step back a second and let you know that he doesn't bring this up all that often anymore. He sort of pulled back from his conversation about being reincarnated from Edgar Cayce. He was first exposed to this thought back in the 90s. I think it was the early 90s when he moved to Virginia Beach and somebody told him he looked a lot like Edgar Cayce. He hadn't really studied Edgar Cayce at that time, but Edgar Cayce was from Virginia Beach. So it made sense that somebody might say that to him. He then spent the next couple of years studying Edgar Cayce and got really involved in looking at, you know, pictures and photographs of Edgar Cayce and realizing, oh, I look like him. But not only that, people in my life look like people in Edgar Cayce's life. For example, he thought that Edgar Cayce's wife looked a lot like one of his friends. And it also was weird to David to find out that his star chart, his astrological star chart, is similar to Edgar Cayce's, and he had never realized that before. Now, with regard to the photos are all black and white of Edgar Cayce and his community. And the photos that David shares, the side-by-side images, are made to look like those photos. So they are black and white, a little bit grainy, and the people are posed looking like the person that they're emulating. So for example, in the Edgar Cayce photo, he's sitting there and David has posed himself to look in the same posture and wearing similar clothing. And at first glance, it does appear as though they look alike. But once you start really looking at him, you notice, oh wait, their foreheads are different. Their eyes are different. Their noses are different. Their cheekbones rise in different ways. And then at the end of it, you're like, oh, they don't actually look all that similar at all. But if you're just doing a quick glance, yeah, I'll give him that. He looks like Edgar Cayce. He also believes that he is the reincarnate of the Egyptian sun god Ra. And he has channeled Ra before, and we could talk about channeling too. But he talks extensively about that in a book called The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. So this book was written specifically about David Wilcock and Edgar Cayce by a gentleman named Winfrey. And they talk about how they look alike. And this was written in 2004. And apparently it was a fairly popular book. It's a thick book. I read all 400 pages of it. And in it, there are descriptions of how Edgar Cayce was and what he was like and what David is like. And if you read into it, you start to think, oh, if you're a New Age person, you're going to jump on the bandwagon and say, yep, it's clear to me that Edgar Cayce has reincarnated himself into David Wilcock. But reincarnation isn't something that is talked about in New Age circles all that often today. And so you won't hear David talking about this regularly now on his YouTube channel. He's sort of moved on to other things, and it's not as important to him as it once was. but he used to go to great lengths to support it. He even claimed that Jesus used to teach reincarnation. And he said that Jesus taught this reincarnation idea to Peter, who apparently called it the great secret teaching of Jesus. But at the First Council of Nicaea, the people who were putting together the New Testament didn't include those verses. Now, there's no evidence that shows that anything about reincarnation was ever eliminated from the Bible or that it even existed. And in fact, reincarnation is negated in the Bible. For example, Hebrews 9:27 says that man is appointed to die once and then face judgment. It doesn't say man is appointed to die and then live again and then die and then live again. And so I think it's really clear in scripture that we die once and then we face judgment, and that reincarnation is not a real thing.
So in light of that, I just wanted you to give us a little bit more information on Edgar Cayce. You mentioned in depth about his belief that he was reincarnated from Edgar Cayce, or that he used to think that and talk about it a lot. And then you mentioned also that he thought he was also reincarnated from the Ra, the Egyptian sun god. So who was Edgar Cayce? He's very big in the whole occult and New Age movement. And did he have a connection with the Egyptian sun god Ra?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because I think a lot of people in our age group might not know who Edgar Cayce was, because they're not studying this as much as, you know, you or I are studying these things. Edgar Cayce lived in the late 1800s and early 1900s. He was an American clairvoyant. Like I said, he was sort of one of the founding fathers of New Age movement, if you will, in the United States. He would perform psychic readings. And the way that he would do this is he would connect with the universal consciousness. He's known mostly for his medical predictions, but what he would do is he would fall asleep. And so his nickname is actually the Sleeping Prophet, because when he was asleep, he would have these dreams as he was connecting with the universal consciousness and get answers about people's medical problems. So people would send letters to him and say, hey, my family member is sick. Can you tell me what's wrong with them and how we can help them? He would then lay down and sleep and dream about this person and come up with an answer because of that dream. He has been criticized heavily, though, for being, I hesitate to use the word false prophet, because he never claimed to really be a prophet, but he was not really very good at this. And he apparently made quite a few errors in his predictions and even would make predictions about people's full recovery, for example, and the person would receive the letter and the person had already died. And so he was saying, oh yeah, this person is going to recover, and they were dead. And so he was clearly wrong when he was making these predictions. As far as Ra goes, Cayce also had a higher self, somebody that he strove to be, and that was Ra. He channeled Ra, and he believed that he was reincarnated from Ra. So that really draws a picture of, we've got Ra, the Egyptian sun god, leading to Edgar Cayce, then leading to David Wilcock. So David Wilcock then is a sort of reincarnation of Ra as well.
So earlier in the podcast, you mentioned the law of one, that he holds to the law of one, O-N-E. And what is the law of one, and why is it important to David Wilcock?
The law of one is supposedly disseminated from Ra. So when David Wilcock is channeling Ra, Ra is teaching him the law of one. And it is something that David started studying a lot in 1996. He says he found it because he's very well read. He says that he's very well read. And he had read more than 300 books on esoteric subjects like UFOs, Atlantis, Bigfoot, the pyramids. And he stumbled upon this law of one and became sort of obsessed by it, because he realized that he didn't know anything that the source of law of one knew, Ra being that source. The bottom line of the law of one, it says that you are everything, every being, every emotion, every situation. You are love, you are light, and you are infinity, you are unity. This is the law of one. And this is one of the key New Age beliefs out there, that we are all one and that we are combined with our Creator, and there is no separation between our Savior and us, that we are our Savior. And I think this idea is vital in David's life. I would say that it governs everything in his life. For him, he sees it in colors and numbers and vibrations, which is something we talked a lot about with Teal Swan, sound frequencies and music. But he doesn't think that it's leading to anything negative. He thinks the law of one is all about being harmonious. So he has said that this is literally what he lives his life by. The law of one is incorporated into, I would say, pretty much everything I have read by him or watched on his YouTube channel. He has brought up the law of one. I would say that this is probably the number one belief in David Wilcock's life.
So you did mention that he has taken scripture out of context and said that he studied Christianity too, and that it affirms his views of spirituality. So what does David Wilcock specifically believe about God and Jesus?
David Wilcock believes in God, but not the personal God that Christians believe in. So it's important that we're defining terms. I can't just say David Wilcock believes in God, because then the question is always, which God? And you need to really clarify. David does not believe there is any separation between God and humanity. We just talked about the law of one. We're all together. We're all incorporated into this intelligent energy field, and it encompasses the entire cosmos. So we are literally all one, according to David Wilcock. As far as Jesus goes, he talks about Jesus. I mean, I wouldn't say as much as he talks about the law of one, but he does talk about Jesus a lot, which can really muddy the waters when somebody who doesn't know what David Wilcock believes, they are, you know, listening to him and they're hearing him talk about Jesus and quoting Jesus in his lectures. Like I said, he wanted to be like Jesus when he was a kid. He really had these visions of walking on water. But who is Jesus to David Wilcock? He doesn't consider him a savior. He doesn't consider him the son of God. He's sort of the path maker or the way shower, I guess is a good way to put it. He's the spark within us, is another way that David Wilcock has described Jesus. He thinks that Jesus has just been put on a pedestal that he shouldn't have been put on, and that he was made to be too much than he actually was, because we can all ultimately, once we've ascended, become like Jesus. Jesus wasn't really anything special per se to David Wilcock. And I think that's important to remember, because if he's talking about Jesus and he's quoting scripture, one could be deceived and think that Jesus would agree with some of the things that David is saying. And if we read scripture carefully and we don't cherry pick verses and read things in context, we will recognize that David is not speaking what Jesus would be speaking.
I'm interested to know if he's made predictions about the future and if any of them have come true, because I started watching one of his more recent videos that he live streamed for 3 hours about a week ago or so, and had to do with global meditation for peace or something like that. But the very beginning, he didn't kind of get to the point very quickly, but for the first 5 minutes, he kept saying like, hey, you need to tune into this because everything I've been telling you about, it's totally coming true. You know, anybody who's followed me has known, and he didn't specifically say what it was exactly yet. And of course, I didn't tune in for all 3 hours, but he kept saying, you know, I told you guys, you should have listened to me. I've been predicting these things. So it sounds like he has made predictions, but have any of them come true? Because he's claiming that they have.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it is a true point about his videos. He will talk and talk and talk and dangle that carrot and keep you there because you want to hear what he has to say. The first live stream I participated in with him was back in September, and it was about time travel. And he dangled that carrot for hours too. So he definitely does make predictions about the future. He made a prediction about Y2K and some computer virus. But to be fair, a lot of people were making predictions about Y2K and a computer virus, and that didn't come to pass. I mentioned that he had predicted a solar flare in 2012. That doesn't appear to have happened. He recently predicted that the internet would be shut down for several days and there would be a total blackout. That didn't happen. And in the last page of his most recent book, which came out last year in the middle of the pandemic, he actually added an author's note about COVID-19, which I thought was fascinating. And I couldn't find the quote a couple days ago because I checked out his book from the library. And I actually had a friend on Twitter who's an atheist send me the note because he had kept it because it was such an interesting note about the COVID pandemic. David believes that he predicted this pandemic back in 1996. And he spends a page talking about this specific prediction. And I want to take a second to talk about that because his followers are jumping on the bandwagon with him. But if you're looking at it from the outside, you don't quite make the same connections that he's making. So the prediction in 96 was, by 2010, germs will have rid the earth of many problems. Overpopulation is nothing to scoff at. He claims that 2010 is actually 2020 because it's only different by one number. It's 20 minus 1 is 19. That's interesting. And then he says, nothing to scoff at sounds like nothing to cough at. And we know that COVID-19 virus creates a dry cough that produces nothing. And for him, that's confirmation that he predicted successfully this pandemic in 1996. Now, we can criticize him and say, you know, but most of your predictions don't come true, David. Well, he has a defense for that. And he says that prophecies don't need to happen in order for them to be true, because people who see the future aren't actually seeing the future. They're seeing the probable future. Things can change if you see something that you don't want to happen. So if he predicts some terrible thing and he wants it to change, he has the ability to do that. And one of the ways he does that is through some of the mass meditations that he hosts on his YouTube channel.
Yes, and his YouTube channel is quite popular. And, you know, we've been talking about his New Age beliefs, and you did also note that he believes a lot of, you know, various conspiracy theories about the government, but specifically, I'm assuming a lot of theories about aliens, which is why he's on the Ancient Aliens program on the History Channel. And I know that he talks a lot about, you know, time travel and aliens and so forth on his live stream. So can you kind of tell us a little bit more of some of his thoughts about ancient aliens and, you know, UFOs and those kinds of things that I'm sure people, that's how they originally hear about David Wilcock. They probably see him on the History Channel and then it causes them, oh, I'm going to check him out on YouTube, and then they can find all of his in-depth videos there.
Yeah, he has, I think at last count, the last time I looked, he had 453,000 subscribers. And in the live streams that he does, he regularly gets into the 20,000 viewers. He's got 20,000 people just watching him. And as you mentioned, at the end of the week, he's generally at the 500,000 spot of views, which is just phenomenal for somebody on YouTube. And in his recent videos, I'd say in the last year, he ends them with a mass meditation. And so he leads his viewers through a meditation process because, as I mentioned, he believes that this can change events. And he says that these meditations have prevented acts of terrorism. Of course, he says that and doesn't provide any evidence. But he talks about everything, Melanie. He talks about time travel. He produced a movie and starred in, it's a documentary that is now streaming live on YouTube called The Cosmic Secret. And he talks about his experiences with aliens starting at age, I think it was 2. And they summarize the battle that is happening between different sections of aliens, I guess is the easiest way to describe it. He said that one way to think about it is that Star Wars is actually a documentary. So if you think of this cosmic battle that's happening in Star Wars, that's what's actually happening in the world. And he spends so much time talking about aliens and benevolent extraterrestrials is what he calls them. He says that he's been experimented on by aliens. He says that he doesn't remember things. He's lost time. And he thinks that's the time that he has spent with aliens. He spends time with friends who've also been abducted by aliens. He, through his readings with Ra and channeling Ra, he claims that he's what people call a wanderer. So that's a soul that was an extraterrestrial who volunteered to become a human so that we could help humans become ascended beings. He thinks that aliens have implanted their DNA in humanity so that we can ascend more quickly. He thinks that there are great prophecies in the pyramids that predicted things like the Exodus in the Bible, the death of Christ, World War I, 9/11. He thinks that there are worlds hidden away inside the moon and other planets and within Earth, that there are entire cities that are millions and millions of years old. But his main message is that most aliens want to help us and not ruin things for us. You might hear him talk about the secret space program. He believes that there are military bases that actually have time travel machines, that you can travel through time, changing things. If things happen today that you didn't want to happen, you can go back in time and fix that or go forward and see what's going to happen. He says it's a regular thing. I just watched a podcast with him on Jenny McCarthy's podcast. He was on with his friend Corey Good, and they talked about some secret space program where people are actually working on Mars. And he believes this. You scan your card when you're checking into work one day and you're immediately transported to Mars and you spend your day working at Mars. So this is really the stuff that he is known for. And this is the stuff that people listen to him about. But while he is talking about aliens, he is talking about this cosmic battle. And for him, it's aliens fighting each other. It's not angels and demons, if you will. It's not what we've been taught in scripture. And so that's how he incorporates his New Age beliefs, really, is making these aliens real and describing how they want to impact humanity for good. And some of them want to impact us for bad. And how can we save humanity by working with these, what he calls benevolent ETs?
So how should, after talking about his various different New Age beliefs, how should Christians be able to respond to or dialogue with people who are starting to really listen to David Wilcock's teaching, probably because they got into finding out more about his beliefs through the History Channel?
I would say tread lightly. Remember that David Wilcock and other New Age gurus are still image bearers of God. And the people that follow them are just trying to find hope. And they want to be thinking about, how are we going to get past all this bad stuff? And when is it going to be good again? And so I would say, don't be quick to criticize. I spent a lot of time with David Wilcock. I wasn't with him per se, but I have spent hours and hours with him on YouTube watching his videos and reading, you know, I read 3 or 4 of his books. And the same way that I started to feel for Teal Swan, I've started to feel for David Wilcock. And I think that's where Christians really need to find themselves. We need to be considering how we can promote the gospel in the midst of these conspiracies or New Age beliefs. I think of David sort of like a televangelist. He does get quick pays on YouTube when he's live, so people can donate money while he's talking, and you can see him rack up thousands of dollars that way, and people send him donations, and he's promoting classes that he's teaching that cost hundreds of dollars to attend. But I would say, the same way that you would talk to your family members who are subscribing to the prosperity gospel or other televangelists on TV, that is the way that we would want to approach those who buy into David Wilcock. Look, it's tough because he's weaving in truth with lies, and it's difficult to tell which is which sometimes. I listened to another person who was on a podcast who is an alien investigator. So he's like David in that way. He's an alien investigator. And he was criticizing David because David latches on to so many conspiracy theories and it discredits whatever truth he thinks is out there. He's constantly talking about insiders And as Christians, we need to be really careful about when people are presenting ideas as truth, but there's no evidence or foundation behind it. Anybody can say they have insiders, but these insiders are never coming forward. And he says that we need to support whistleblowers, that he is the ultimate whistleblower. And so I think we need to be careful about, as Christians, what we are trusting and making sure that it is grounded in truth. Just because someone says something is in the Bible and uses a Bible verse to support it doesn't automatically make it true. James Sire, he talked about this and said, if you use the Bible in what you're promoting, it actually gains credibility for your cause sometimes. And so just because somebody cites scripture doesn't mean that what they are saying is true. And when we're dealing with people who are caught in this world, we need to be gentle and show them respect, just like 1 Peter 3:15 says. And we need to show them the truth and the hope that's within us. If they've never heard the gospel, we know that they're wanderers. They're trying to find hope in this world that is right now particularly suffering. And we're feeling this very heavy weight and burden. And I think we need to really be careful about just criticizing and mocking. I do not support mocking people who buy into these things. That is not building bridges. That's building barriers. And as I said in my article, we just need to dismantle arguments, not people. We need to remember that these are humans made in the image of God, whether we're talking about David, his wife, or, you know, his followers. And ultimately, we should pray for them. And if we're given the opportunity to share real hope with them, we should take that opportunity.
Well, finally, on a lighter note, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Lindsay. So, Lindsay, I know that there was some unusual snow recently in Texas. So, snow angels or building snowmen?
I like snowmen. They're so cute.
Are you an early bird or a night owl?
I used to say early bird, but now I sleep until about 6:45. I don't know if that makes me an early bird or what, but I think I stay up late these days.
And are the cups in your kitchen cabinet right side up or upside down?
Upside down.
Well, thank you so much, Lindsay, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Lindsay Madenwalt, who has written a feature article for the print edition of the Christian Research Journal in volume 43, number 1. And her article is called Humanity's Ascension, Assessing the History Channel's New Age Time Travel Guru, David Wilcock. You can read her article when you subscribe to the magazine at equip.org. We'd like to connect to you, so please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man YouTube channel and join in the conversation in the comment section and in the live chat when we have premiere videos. Please follow the Bible Answer Man page on Facebook and on Twitter. You will find us at Hank Hanegraaff, Bible Answer Man, Christian Research Institute, and Christian Research Journal, as well as on Instagram at the Bible Answer Man account. You won't want to miss every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern when we live stream the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff at our website, equip.org. In addition, please subscribe to the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank gets out of the studio and into his study and engages in in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. You'll want to head on over to equip.org because there you're going to find thousands of free resources for you in articles and past broadcasts, our podcasts, and videos. And thank you for all the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute.